Talk about you got this and you got that, and you gonna murder this one and murder that one. Talking all that bullshit, I'm gonna put it to you like this, yo.
This is for the nerds, this is for the brainiacs, this is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back, you ain't gonna touch me. You're not gonna do nothing, you are not above me. I bet you wish you was me, I know that I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but is not limited to, my boy Tortua.
What's up? What's going on?
You're fucking fired.
Never. I can't even throw it to Berkey.
Never again.
I'll tell you, this fucking bit died. I appreciate you, Brian.
I try, man. No, you know,
you're
for you.
You're doing the Lord's work.
Thanks.
Oh, my God.
It's because you have that great hoodie on right now.
That's right.
Still
going to Pibulinski, Berkshire from now on.
Mm-hmm. That's who you should
girl.
Go to.
That's who I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good girl.
I'm a little nervous she's starting to get separation anxiety. We've been working on Stay, and the issue is that she was taught very young to follow me if too much distance occurs. So in other words, basically it was instilled in her at a very young age that like if I wander off, she better keep up because I could just leave and that would be bad for her. And the problem is with Stay, you need to create some distance because the whole reason you want them to stay is because you're leaving the room.
Right.
So I've been gradually like working on more distance, and it's not the distance now, it's can she see me or not.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in her eye line, she's great. She'll stay for like minutes and it's working really well. But the second I move like left or right outside of her sight, she just immediately breaks. And I'm just like, you know, I understand. Yeah. I see why this is happening to you, and I don't really have a solution for it. We're just gonna keep on practicing until you figure it out.
Yeah, she'll figure it out.
She also hates the car.
Really?
Yeah.
She's not a big fan of it.
I'm not sure what to do about that. All my other puppies have always been like, oh, car, boom,
yeah,
jump
they
in,
love it.
Kind
yeah.
of thing. And then they started to hate it as they got older. She just hates it right off the...
She's not the worst right with it. She kind of just crawls up in her ball when she gets in.
No, she's fine when she's in. She just doesn't want to get in the car.
Yeah.
Like, you open the door and she turns around and walks away.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, for Gatsby, I open the door, and even at 13, he's...
Let me get in.
Speaking of Gatsby, big shout out to the old man pup. 13th birthday today.
Wow. Happy birthday, Gatsby.
13?
He's a young, spry...
Teenager.
91-year-old man. Is that how that math works out?
I think so, yeah.
I think so.
Man, he's looking good. He's teaching Pip the ways, you know, just how to lounge on a lazy Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
This is a typical day for the kid. I mean, honestly, I thought about it. I got nervous. I actually Googled it because he spends like 18 hours a day doing this. And lo and behold, dogs just sleep a lot.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, who knew?
I think 18 would be probably the under.
Yeah.
I would take the over on 22.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair.
Let the sleeping dogs lie, you know?
He gets the zoomies every now and again.
Yeah, he's chilling.
A lot happened this weekend.
You think?
Always on the internet.
I mean, honestly, like, wasn't that much. Conrad went to a fight. I got in a fight.
I looked in
the
podcast chat had 350 messages, and I just was just like, who died?
Really? I think that's pretty tame for us. We weren't even talking that much about it.
No, the podcast chat is usually like there's a different. The other chat, it's always.
Oh,
like,
that's because my man Matt Hunt was involved, and you know we had to up the game a little bit. You know, we had to step up for him. Mm-hmm. Conrad babysitting while this poor child's father gets his face kicked in.
I think that's that perfect time. And
Connie playing nanny.
Yep.
Kid was awesome. We just played peekaboo the whole fight.
He better be. His dad's going to brain damage.
Oh,
whose father is he?
I actually don't even know. But I do
one
know.
One of the undercards?
Yeah. But his dad got robbed. Like in a fight that we all thought was like 29-28 his way.
Mm.
Well, the second they said unanimous decision,
and it went the other way. We're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
They weren't very
happy.
How
are you in the friends and family section?
We're not. They're in our section. They just brag. Got moved there.
Conrad's a wag.
Yeah, he is.
Undercover wag.
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of sick because they just moved the friends and family section there. So one fighter's family's in front of us. And it's like, there's a lot of shit talking going on in these fights when people are fighting. Somebody might have one side, and you know, that might not be the family that's in front of you.
Sure.
Side.
Yeah.
So, you know, shit might go down there.
Betting is a hell of a drug.
It's kind of interesting. We were making fun of something that happened in a previous fight. And actually, that the girlfriend that was or wife that was in that picture thought we were talking about them. And she turns around, and she's like, "You guys are fucking weird." And we're like, "We're not even talking about you."
Listen, bro. Listen, if I've learned anything, there is no room to call people weird in 2024. Okay, listen,
that's what she said to me.
That's
or Pete.
I called JMO weird, and it turned into a whole fucking melee. All right, like let's just lay off the weird comments. Leave it in Austin.
Oh boy,
you stay weird, Austin.
Stay weird.
I'm unfortunately not in Texas, but our man B Hanks is there. He's representing.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite in Austin. A little bit up the state
in
Houston. Well, he's playing for $400,000, Brian.
That's pretty serious.
15 left.
Let's go.
An above average stack, from what I understand.
All right.
Well, there's 14 left at least now.
Why? Somebody busted?
Sean Deeb has exited.
Oh, shit. Yeah. That's unfortunate because he needed eighth or better to get even.
Yeah, he was telling Norman Chad congrats or something like
that. How can you be in for 15 bullets in a 3K?
It's not that hard.
The fuck? It isn't.
You would find your fucking self in
no,
for
15. I don't. No, because like I have...
Listen,
I'm emotionally stunted. I cannot handle busting the same event 14 times. I don't have that in me. Like, whatever dog you need in you.
All right, so here.
To fire that. Do you understand?
Listen.
The 5K that I got second in Florida, I had busted 5 bullets, and I go to Emma, and I go, I can't. I'm done. She goes, let's take a walk. We go to dinner, and she goes, max late, Reg.
Now, expand that out as if you played tournaments instead of cash. Now, if you did play tournaments, your level would be way...
I don't think so,
it
man.
Would. It would 100% be.
You yeah, just, get used to
you'd
the
be in for fucking 5 or 6 mm-hmm. enough that it doesn't even matter.
I just don't think the math works out where you want to put yourself in a position that you have to like final 3. I mean, I guess like every time you enter a tournament, you're kind of in the position where you need the final 3 in order to make money.
But well, it should all be independent of each other.
Sort of, yeah. I mean,
like you shouldn't look at it like, oh, well, I have to get 8 to get even. Like, you just have to cash. To make money on that bullet that you're specifically in at the moment. You already lost all the money there. You busted those tournaments.
Yeah, but
just because it's the same tournament,
yes,
it's technically not.
Yes, the return on your buy-in,
right.
The ROI on the buy-in mm-hmm. is the same. The ROI on the actual event itself, though,
yeah.
is certainly lower, and you just busted 14 other bullets.
Right.
Like, I find it hard to believe.
Mentally, it's a whole different thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, clearly, Deeb is just fucking built different because every time he does this, he seems to find a way to bag and run deep.
Yeah, like if you can like separate it in your mind where you're not firing 15 bullets into one tournament, you're just playing 15 3Ks.
I've been into the 5 diamond for 6 before and did not cash. And I don't even know that I bagged day 2. And that seems like the most probable outcome mm-hmm. to me. Like, you're in for an amount where it was a 10K. It was a big, big 10K. First was like $2 million. Mm-hmm. But still, if you're in for 6, you got to get like final 2 tables.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's the goal anyway. So I guess I get it from that standpoint. But yeah, you just...
I mean, it's the same thing as like playing a... you know, like a long cash game session, and it's like, how many times am I going to bust before I like rebuy again?
Well, you know,
I got to like get even. Like, I
Brian,
can't get even. I need to win 5-6 buy-ins to get even.
Brian,
right?
That's the thing. After the third rebuy, he doesn't rebuy anymore. He just takes the box and puts it on the table. So he doesn't have to worry about the rebuy.
Right.
He doesn't have to worry about
that. What if you're playing in a cash game where there's a cap, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's similar, but the difference is that, you know, there's no opportunity cost in going home. Right, like if you bust 3 buy-ins and you're just like, you know what, maybe today's not my day, going home, there's no opportunity cost. But there is in these tournaments, because that tournament then expires.
Yeah.
right? Or I could just show up to 2.5 again tomorrow.
Right.
Try again.
Right.
You know, it's like with cash, I think it's all about quality hours. With tournaments, it does just seem like
you have to play because the event is happening. Right.
That's
now.
Hell. Yeah. That's absolute hell. You're jumping the gun. I was working.
I thought this was a great segue, man. Talking about playing 2.5s. Come on.
That was a reach. but yes, I will be in Milwaukee. I think I get there early Wednesday. We will be a part of the grand opening at the Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Their poker room is going to be opening on, I'm not sure if it opens officially on Wednesday, and then we're doing the meetup game on Thursday. But in any event, Thursday noon I almost said it 2 p.m. Thursday at noon at the Pottawatomie Poker Room. Myself, Jamin Burton, Jamie Kerstetter, we're going to be running a meetup game. Friday is the grand opening for their sports book. So for all the real degenerates out there, be sure to be in attendance for that. We're going to be doing a lot of fun stuff while we're in town. I might even try to catch a Brewers game. I don't...
Who are they playing?
I don't know. This is
they're getting their dick kicked in by the Yankees.
Good.
This past weekend. Good. My for God.
Us. Good 15 for us. 5 yesterday?
Yeah, and then I think it was a similar score the day before.
Very good for us. We held our own versus the Giants, but I'm not sure if the Giants are going to be good or not this year.
It looked like they stink. They had a bad series against the Marlins.
Three very close games for Buckeyes.
Yeah, they're like 500 right now. This is the problem with me in baseball. It's like it's this weird dichotomy where
I love... What the fuck does a dichotomy mean?
Look it up. I don't have time for you. on one hand, I like have this like deep admiration for the sport of baseball, and I love watching it for all its nuance, and I can really dig in and like, you know, figure out like pitch sequence and stuff like that, and I can really get involved in that. On the other hand, at the surface, I'm just a Pittsburgh fan, mm-hmm. and I don't fucking care
right.
to watch another team play like mm-hmm. in the least. So going to like a Brewers fucking Marlins game sounds like absolute torture.
Yeah.
Going you to just a Marlins anything sounds like torture.
Yeah, you just root for
nap who, time for you.
Whoever the opponent is.
Yeah, of course.
Unless it's another central
team. Well, I mean, it's different if they let me fucking go down the slide.
Yeah.
If Tom can make it work where I get, you know,
yeah,
I get to be Benny the Brewer for mm-hmm. a day, that's a different story. That would be amazing. I feel like it would be cheating. Like I'd be cheating on the Pirates.
Well, no.
Did Connor just leave to go throw up?
I think. I don't know. He gone.
He is not throwing up.
Are we sure?
I'm positive.
Okay. Well, I hope he's not shitting. There's no toilet paper in that bathroom.
Oh, Jesus. It's,
I can confirm.
No, what you do, man. Burke, is you go down the slide as Benny the Brewer. Right,
and then you tear
and
it off,
and you tear it off, and you got all right. your Pirates gear on.
Yeah. I just come out as the parrot. Mm-hmm. Man, imagine!
Oh, that would be so great.
That really would be epic. God, would love to see it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we do have a lot of stuff to get. Good luck to Brent. We're all pulling from you here, buddy.
Yes.
If you go win Brent. This one, would love to have you back on. You know, I miss having the plat.
Mm. Oh, there you go.
There we go. See. There you go. You want to? Oh, let's not read
it. No. Let's
read quietly to yourselves, everybody.
I pray that Brent doesn't get deuce. No mallards.
Relax.
Oh, mallards.
Don't get the mallards.
Could you imagine if he wins the tournament with mallards?
He should just. God, it'd be so great. He should just pull it anyway. I'm rooting for nothing more than when Landon wins the WPT. I'm so ready for the 3-5 off winner pick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's gonna be so good.
Is it coming?
It's gonna be so good. The only problem is it's like pretty unoriginal, but
he already did that.
I know.
He already did it for the win.
That pick was actually fantastic.
That was great because it was right in the middle of like what it was really being hyped up. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we will get to the Cunty Cakes JMO.
I don't know who that is.
Back and forth. That's fine. You don't need to. we'll get to that a little bit later in the show, but I want to make sure that we address this stuff that's happening with ACR and the Venom here in the forefront. So this morning, it looks as though this came out about 7 hours ago, so would have been 5 a.m. Pacific time, give or take. What is going on here?
Is that a little large for you?
It was for the blind. MTT Database Review tweeted, the second largest stack in day two of the Venom is a bot that I reported to ACR over a month ago, including directly to the head of security and, you know, Phil Nagy. bot that I reported together with another 50 MTT bots, out of which the majority are still active. So to give a little bit of context to this, there's a high stakes Discord that I'm also a part of. And MTT database review is one of the major posters. And we have a direct line of communication to all of the site reps. So he was in direct communication, it appears months ago, or over a month ago, with the site reps of WPN, basically saying, like, here's a list of all these bots, you should look into them. And he even went so far as to forewarn them, like, with the biggest Venom coming up, you are certainly going to take on a bot attack. Be sure to do your due diligence ahead of time. Now, what comes from this is pretty wild. So before we get to the resolution, let's talk about the fallout. So Baruzi notices the name of this bot, which is Withia. And by the way, like, I'm presuming it's a bot based off of the action that ACR took. But hey, Withia, if you're out there and you're real, you know, you want to pass the CAPTCHA test.
Yeah.
Hit us up.
Yeah.
We'll have you on. You can defend your honor. You know, you can click on all the signs that are street signs.
If you look at Withia's...
I always get buses.
Shark buses, scope. Sure. It's like up and down between $10,000.
Yeah, but it's, well, there it's, is it's a sample person of like 200
that's
hands.
Behind yeah. the bot.
Sure.
So they could just be like, oh, it's just me.
No, they can't.
No, they can't.
Because they would have to be aligned with the account.
Right.
They can't have... You know, like, the assumption is that if it's a bot account, then it's probably also, like, you know, his grandmother.
Right.
He couldn't have another account. Like everything right. had yeah, to be yeah. in their Got name. You. Everything right. had to fall
yeah.
in place.
But, yeah, anyway, with you, if you're out there, would love to hear from you. That's the big thing that I don't understand with ACR's stance with the bots, of them saying, like, oh, a lot of these guys are falsely accused and, like, they're not stealing nearly as much as they say, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I haven't heard one goddamn person of these lists of hundreds. We've had hundreds of people accused of being bots. I haven't heard one motherfucker come out and say, like,
I'm not a bot.
I was wrongfully accused.
Yeah.
I'm a human being. Weird. I just have a bot-like win rate.
Yeah.
Like, not one?
Not one.
Come on, true. Man. In today's day, I mean, I see people tweeting at fucking Southwest Air every day to get a coupon. Because they were wronged in some way, shape, or form. You're telling me that somebody who's accused mm-hmm. of being a bot and has, like, thousands of dollars taken from their account isn't going to step up and say, hey, I'm a person. And I deserve to be treated like a person.
For real. Back to this Baruzi story, because I think it's kind of interesting.
It's wild.
It's like, what are they going to do? It's literally one of the last hands of the night.
Well, we know what they're going to do because they put a statement out. But that's why I wanted to cover this first, because it leads into the statement. So Baruzi puts up a hand. He says, wait a second. I lost to this account on the last hand of the day for a near chip lead pot. So this bot bagged second in chips. And it was based off of this hand. So Baruzi... I think cold 3-bet squeezed ace king over like a raise and a call. Yeah, cutoff raise. Oh, no. Sorry, he cold 4-bet. Oh, and this is pretty interesting, too, because the bot chose the 3-bet threes on the button, which is, let's call low frequency. So Baruzi cold 4s ace king, and he goes bet jam on a river ace. Button, or the bot, has quad threes, and it was for a 300 big blind pot. Now, don't get me wrong, Baruzi still has a lot of chips. He still has like 75 blinds when the hand's over, but that's not the point here, right? The point is the amount of EV that this hand itself is worth is in the tens of thousands yeah. for sure, right? Taking a chip lead stack into day two, which Baruzi would have been the chip leader, I'm sure. Well, I guess we can't assume that because he couldn't have won the pot, but he would have been a top
15 stack.
He would have been a top stack instead of like an above average stack. Yeah. In any event, like this pot is obviously worth tens of thousands of dollars, and now he clearly, based off of the action that ACR is taking, has lost it to a bot. So
so he gets fucked out of his chips, and they get redispersed through
correct
through him blinding out in his new table.
Yeah. So in thread, he then mentions ACR again. He goes, "Hey ACR, this hand happened. This hand is worth around $30,000 USD that I lost to Withia. You just banned this account while the tournament is running for being a bot, but you do not plan on compensating any affected players? ? Just 6 million chips taken out of play and that's it. Nah, this is fucking stupid. I'm going to add a bit of info. This was literally the last hand of day one. I only played two hands on this table prior to this. Had I won this pot, I actually have no idea how to react. Obviously, I'm being biased. The problem is that this account was reported before the tournament by MTT Data Review. ACR only acted upon it once the bot slash cheat wins all the chips. This situation implies the ACR just waits until victims are affected before they act. This is exactly what's wrong with your site. You're always reactive instead of proactive. I love what Nagy's trying to do for poker and appreciate the effort put in by your team to compete with the other sites, but for fuck's sakes, get your shit together. This is a statement by Baruzzi. Imagine this happening to somebody with no social media or awareness about the situation. I'm down like 200K lifetime in the Venom alone. And finally, the one time things go well, this situation happens. It's honestly just comical. So a little bit of this statement reads emotionally, but I think his overarching point is very well stated. Mm-hmm. And that is that you have a much bigger problem where you open a much larger can of worms. Once you allow this guy to accumulate an ICM stack that's worth worth like five figures, maybe low six figures. I'm not sure what the payout distribution looks like, but
how many
it's certainly
left?
Worth a lot. Not sure. I
but
think
there's
like
1,000 left, 600 paid.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say they're pretty close to the money.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, second in chips is worth a lot. Now, let's get to the ACR response to this because, again, I think that there's a lot to talk about here. So the statement from the security department of...
Sorry, dude, it's just this big. just leave me alone.
He couldn't see it. What do you want for him?
Can't you reduce the size on your browser?
Listen, that's okay. There's probably a lot of people watching on their phone.
Yeah, but the thing is, now we're going to have to read it. Like, we're going to have to scroll word by word.
it'll be fine, I promise. If anyone complains, it's my fault.
I'm complaining. Okay. At the WPN, the integrity and fairness of our gaming platform are paramount of importance. that's literally one sentence for what it's
worth.
The
only reason why you stopped is because Brian started laughing. You would have been perfectly fine.
It's impossible. In line with our security protocols and following the review of suspicious playing patterns, we have suspected the account of the player under the username Withia, who currently holds the second position in chips during our ongoing multi-day tournament, the Venom 12.5 million guarantee. This action has been taken due to potential violations of our terms and conditions. As part of our standard operating procedure, gameplay for this player has been suspended pending further investigation. Should this player cash in the 12.5 million tournament while being blinded out, we will adhere strictly to our TOCs and including laddering payouts accordingly. As always, we continue to actively monitor the play on our network and are committed to maintaining a fair and secure gaming environment for all of our players. Now, the problem with this.
It's not
like exactly good on them for taking some sort of action, not just saying we'll look into it.
It's not exactly fair for all the players.
I think
it's
this would have never happened if Nanonoko never left.
You bro, have a
Nanonoko's last statement was, I haven't been consulting since December, and everybody else replied with, when did you start consulting? Bro did nothing. He was at minimum supposed to be a liaison between the community and the security reps, and he was impossible to communicate with. Like, no offense, like, I'm sure Nanonoko's great at a lot of things, but like doing that job was not one of them.
That's very nice passive income.
Imagine being one of the seven or eight players that is sitting on this stacks table that's sitting out right now.
Yeah, you're just getting all the free.
This 30K of fucking EV just lining out. It's actually going to cause some fucking war soon. Just for like fighting over the.
Every time he's in the big
out.
Blind. Yep. Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you don't care about that.
No,
that,
of course.
That, that kind
of
is what it is.
I was just laughing about it.
Well, your point is very valid, though.
Yeah.
Right? So this is not an equitable resolution. Number one, like, the first thing you do is you just pull that account from the, like, you don't let them blind out.
Right, you just take it out of the,
I don't even think you give Baruzzi his, like, I was trying to think about it. Do you give Baruzzi his stack? I don't think you can.
No. But you can certainly compensate him his ICM value of that pot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And not just him. Everybody who played at that table all day long, that guy bagged a pile of fucking chips. Mm-hmm. It was obviously at the detriment of a lot of other players that he came in contact with. The only way to make this right is to retroactively go back and figure out the affected parties. The last thing you want to do is now allow those chips to redistribute to the people that are lucky enough to get a dead stack at their table.
Right.
That's an insane solution.
Mm-hmm. We're just going to go fucking see, and it's going to be a whole bunch of ACR pros at his table.
Right.
That would be fucking hilarious. Well,
you don't have to worry. It won't be Rob Kuhn. He didn't make it.
R.I.P. Rob.
But yeah, I mean, like, I just don't know who's consulting with, like, how do these guys get to these decisions? Like, I'm not trying to like pedestal ourselves or anything along those lines. Like, I'm very tapped into the MTT market. Like, a lot of what I know that's going on is just because of Landon. Like, because of him, I'm in a lot closer contact with a lot of high stakes regs that are really out there fucking crushing it.
What you're trying to say is, how could a room full of people say, oh, this is a great idea?
I don't understand. Let's do this. I just don't understand. if your job is security, I don't understand how you can get this that wrong.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. It just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Is this what Nanonoku was doing behind closed doors? Like, he was making sure that this wasn't how they handled these types of problems? Because if so, then hire him back. Like, this is an insane, insane solution. Imagine, I mean, live, this is just so fucking easy. People get DQ'd, they immediately remove their stack.
Right. Like,
that's just it. There's no blinding off. Now, to be fair, live, they wouldn't go back and retroactively compensate people because they don't have a digital fingerprint, right? There's no way for them to do it.
Also, is there any way they are able to wipe out this stack, like, without fucking up
It's 2024, man. Like, listen, if they can't remove a player from their player pool without the entire site crashing,
listen, man,
they got bigger problems.
They might have bigger problems then. But
okay,
like,
let's stop fucking giving these guys
business. I actually kind of thought that too. I was like, maybe they just the software
they're
can't
just
handle
not
it.
Able to take the player out. I mean, that has to be the situation because like what's happening now, what I'm watching is just like absurd.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that's the situation. But again, if that's true, then we have bigger issues because it means that protocols are not in place for very standard procedure, right? Like, you are going to catch somebody botting in an MTT.
Yeah, I mean, you're not always going to catch them live like this. Whatever,
nuance?
Yeah, sure, nuance.
It's not.
Situation.
It's not, though, because, like, you're going to run... How many fucking Venoms a year? 4, 6, 8?
So you think you're gonna catch a few bots mid Venom every time?
I have a high degree of confidence that GG would not have this problem.
Okay.
Right? And the reason is that they run these multi-flight events all year long, and they are very likely, in my mind anyway, capable within their software of just plucking somebody out of the fucking event. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, because that just has to be a standard response to somebody cheating. Like, what if you catch somebody colluding in the middle of an event? Like, what's you're saying that, like, okay, fine, we're not going to retroactively compensate anybody, and the best we can do is just shut down their account.
Well, I would say from their security and like their just overall, you're never going to find that out mid tournament.
You mean with like GG?
Oh, no, I mean with ACR. You'll never find that out mid tournament. Like, this will always be, like an email to security later on after the tournament.
Sure, sure, sure.
And everything will be handled there, but, like...
I don't think that's true, though, in these multi-flight events.
Okay.
Because there are so many opportunities to do this research. And, more importantly, like, GG and ACR specifically are under way more of a microscope than they've ever been. So the community is, like... The diligence in the community now is so heightened compared to where it was, like, 5 years ago. Right, like, think about whenever Fedor Cruz got caught running RTA. He was literally streaming fucking RTA. Mm-hmm. It took months, as well as his roommates actually diming him out with photographic evidence of his setup. It took all of that for us to finally accept that there are people doing this, right? Yeah. But now it's a totally different landscape. We know that if you can cheat, people will cheat, and if you're not policing the simplest forms of cheating, then you're really ripe for it. So in this instance, they did nothing proactive based off of getting this list of 50 ahead of time.
Yeah, right? That's agreed with.
Right. So it's like, if you're not going to investigate the 50 accounts, you at a bare minimum should have shored up your ability to police them thereafter. Right. And I'm sure that nobody's thinking this way.
Well, I mean, if the former didn't happen, the latter's definitely not going to happen. You know, like, that's kind of like this. Like, nobody's thinking at all then.
I understand how this stuff can slip through the cracks. I understand that there are going to be people on the team that aren't thinking this way. But it's just like it strikes me as odd, especially, like, you know, having a little bit of an understanding of computer science background. It's like the way you think about problems is by stress testing them. You know, it's all about figuring out, like, what's the worst case and then programming your way backwards. So it's like, if they're having meetings where they're like, hey, you know, what do we do if we catch a bot kind of thing? And number one, the compensation aspect of this is insane. Yeah. Right. The fact that we're gonna reward everybody who is remaining in the event by having the 6 million chips just dispersed and blinded off amongst them. And then on top of that, the higher you finish in the event, the more compensation you'll also get if this player happens to make the money, mm-hmm. which they almost certainly will, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that, yeah. that all is insane because it's not actually funneling the money back to the affected players, right? It's almost certainly the most affected players are going to be people who busted to him, people who lost chip league pots to him.
So actually, it's getting funneled to the people that are playing at his table right now.
Exactly.
Who are making more chips. The only reason why they might make it is because of his chips.
Right. Like that, and that entire table is incentivized not to collude, but like almost to soft collude where none of them bubble.
Yeah.
Because the exact opposite is happening that you would have at other tables.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's one simple stack that is feeding the entire table.
Yeah.
Ensuring that like nobody suffers. Now don't get me wrong, like, if there's a big stack there, obviously they're going to take advantage, but like the bigger point I'm trying to get to here is that it's crazy that there isn't some sort of meeting of the minds that are fleshing out what happens.
You just really hurt some feelings.
I mean,
because you know damn well there was a meeting of the minds.
How is this the resolution? I mean, If that's true, then the resolution is basically just off of like, look, like I get it, man. I own and operate a business. I understand that sometimes your hands are tied. And so like if the meeting of the minds were like, okay, well, we can't do any of this other stuff that we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
This is the best we can come up with. Okay, fine. But understand that like you're going to suffer an endless amount of criticism based off of it.
Yeah, no, this sucks.
This is shitty. This is like just a really shitty resolution. The only thing that would be shittier is like not suspending him.
Yeah, letting him play.
Yeah. It's just like letting him keep stealing EV, I guess.
Yeah, it's really weird because like I said, these 7 or 8 players, whatever this is just feeding right now. They're fucking feasting.
Of course.
None of them will probably bust. I mean, getting toward the money.
No, like, of course not. And it's going to take quite some time to blind off a 300 big blind stack.
Oh, yeah. He's chilling.
Right. So
he's
it's
got
like
188 big blinds. I think they've been playing for like 2 hours now.
Yeah. So it's like maybe at some point that table breaks. But like, you know, at that point, how much EV are people going to recoup off? You know, he's going to be a 10 blind stack or whatever.
Yeah. It's just a fucked up situation. And obviously, I think that ACR wasn't ready for this type of situation. Yeah. I don't think they really thought about how to take a player out of the tournament, because if they did, they would have.
Yeah.
And I just
find it to be crazy that they don't have better protocols in place. Like,
that may be
fine,
true.
They can't take the player out of the tournament. That's bothersome to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a clear oversight. But the fact that they're not retroactively compensating the people who he got the chips off of, to me, is like just...
So, like, how would you do that? Like, literally anybody who played a hand with him? Like if you
yeah,
won...
Yeah, you could determine the ICM value of every hand that was played.
I mean, that seems hard to do.
And you just run a program for it.
Yeah, like, maybe.
You know, Stars does this stuff.
I mean, they probably have a script already for it.
Well, that's what I mean.
It's probably just like a plug-and-play type thing. It's just a matter
of... Like, the old school way of doing it was that everybody just bumped up a pay level.
Right.
But that was whenever people would get caught, like VPNing or multi-accounting or something like that.
Yeah, they'd finish second, and then they're just like, yeah.
It's like, okay, we're just going to seize all those funds and disperse it accordingly, because that's relatively fair, all things considered. But like, this is an early level type of situation.
Right.
All the value that this stack is stealing, it's not like they're treating it as though it's zero.
What about people that won chips off of him?
I don't know how that matters.
Yeah,
personally, like,
they're just lucky.
Yeah, I don't think you ever punish.
And it's, I don't know, but I'm saying, can you, like, you can't disperse it like equally, right? Because like they won chips, but then they lost chips to someone else, and they won some chips, and then
WPN will be taking the bath. Like, there's no dispersing any equal. Like,
WPN is definitely coming out of pocket here.
Yeah.
If they have to pay Baruzzi somewhere like 20k for that pot that he lost.
Gotcha.
Where's that 20k coming from? Not the prize pool,
right?
You know, because this guy's not going to cash.
You meant disperse chips back.
No. Money.
I understand. I was like, it'd be way too hard to like figure out like who gets the right chips.
There's like 10 people who probably busted to this guy on day one.
Yeah.
They get a Venom ticket.
Gotcha.
You know, that's very easy compensation.
Right. Yeah, that would be way easier.
I mean,
for sure.
I wouldn't put it past them to like be doing that.
Yeah, now.
Well, yeah.
If they were going to do it, you put that in the fucking statement, bro.
I mean, to be fair, I think they saw this. Like, that tweet was posted at what? Midnight or something like that?
No, 5 a.m.
No, not the security one.
Oh.
The one from MTT database.
Yeah, 5 a.m.
And then the security came out when?
Good question.
Because, like, sure. It's like, this seems like it's a very quick turnaround time.
Well, yeah, of course. They responded very quickly, which we appreciate. But,
yeah, of course.
You know, they also have made their decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't put out a public statement if you haven't already made a decision as to what it is you plan on doing.
Yeah, but I mean, they might have saw that to be fair in the moment and what they were able to do and might go back and, you know, after hearing the community speak.
Sure. Retroactively, I would hope to see that they do a lot more.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll be very quick to applaud them should they. So the tweet was put into the Discord chat at 9:22 a.m. that this statement was released.
Okay.
So basically like a 4-hour difference.
Yeah. I mean, well, hopefully we see some retroactive
payments. But you understand my point, right?
No, of course. We want safeguards put up before this. Like, yeah, I understand what you're saying. But like I said, like if the former's not going to be done, the latter's definitely not going to be done.
Right. I understand. I guess the point I'm saying is like, yeah, sure. Maybe they will retroactively correct and give Venom tickets away to a bunch of people. But that the reason why that's bullshit is because that protocol should absolutely already be there. Right.
The fact that they should have
we already have a compensation plan in place when we catch somebody cheating at various stages of the event.
That's
not hard, man.
No, it's not hard, but like they're putting themselves on the hook for a lot there.
As they should.
Yeah.
This would incentivize them to stop letting fucking bots play.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe when someone sends you a list of 50 ahead of the biggest event you've ever run, you take it a little more goddamn seriously if you have to compensate 200 Venom tickets off of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't exactly expect that to be seen in their protocols when we're putting them on the hook for fucking, what, maybe $500,000 in such type of words.
I get it.
It's like, yeah, I don't exactly expect to see that in the protocol. No. But yeah, I do expect to see something here. Like,
right.
A lot of people got fucked.
I'm just encouraging and reminding everybody that like too little too late is a thing. Right? Like it's because again, like I know that I'm the fucking guy who beats the drum on having these procedures in place, and I'm the asshole because I don't give people any fucking leeway on this stuff. But look, like they've been in operation for 15 years. This isn't the first account to get caught cheating within a tournament. Mm-hmm. The fact that they don't know how to properly compensate is an absolute failure on their behalf, and we should hold their feet to the fire for that. So when they retroactively compensate, great. We're glad you made it right. But you don't get let off the hook for not having this protocol in place. Get it in place in the future now.
Yes,
there should never be a statement released where there isn't clear and utter protocols for how people who are affected will be compensated.
Right.
Right? And like that's just crazy to me to be running a $500 million fucking company and not have simple things in place, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't expect a operator to ever have something in writing that puts them on the hook for anything.
Man, that's like, wild.
I get it, but like they operate in this gray area where they don't fucking have to do it. They just don't fucking have to do it. And although we want them to do it, and although we could do this, do that, they're not going anywhere.
I think that's changing a little bit though. Right? Like,
well, why?
Because I think that there's a lot more upward pressure coming from the community.
Yes.
I think people are speaking out more. I think high stakes regs are doing a lot. I think CEOs are taking note, you know? Like, this is the man developing your protocols. God damn, that's good. That is so fucking good. I mean, like, that was the meeting of the minds right there. Christ, it's
so good. How do you want to go about this, Phil?
Honestly, like, there are so many embarrassing moments post Black Friday of the sites and how they view the consumers. Like, everything from Dean Egg saying fuck the pros like time and time again to now Nagy just like gallivanting around to the Tritons playing virtual fucking porn with the Oculus and everything else is going. It's like, at what point does somebody who's buttoned up and serious start to represent these sites and say, like, look, I was one of you at one point. I understand where you're coming from. Integrity is our number one priority. Like, it's all so weird to me how
it's so hard for that to happen because everything's like black site.
I understand that everything's operating in a gray market. I get all of that, but that's not what's strange to me. What's strange to me is that you have a bunch of man children at the head of things. Like, how do you hire immature teenagers to be either the CEO or the ambassador of your site?
It was like, 15 years ago, poker is viewed as such things.
No. No, the D-Nex thing was like 6 years ago. The Nagy thing was like 6 weeks ago.
I meant like when they got hired.
Like, where is Esai? You know what I mean? Like, this guy was so fucking buttoned up and like so like well put together and led from the front. He understood what his consumer base was and like why it mattered.
The government forced him out to never fucking touch poker again. Right. That's where he is.
I mean, that's partially true. But, you know, he could be consulting for some of these guys. Like, it's just it's maddening to me to see that. It's a bunch. I mean, like, literally, when you look at the top of the top, fucking Bryn Kenny started a site.
Hold on. Bryn Kenny started a site 6 months after being accused of fucking running a dirty stable.
Yeah, dirty agency. It's like, you know, I get that it's dirty, but even the fucking mob has some level of respect at the top. You know what I mean? Like, there aren't mob bosses that are out here fucking. You know what I mean? It's like these guys are fucking actual businessmen in spite of the fact that they use unsavory methods. Yeah. I don't understand how these opportunities are presented to people who are like clearly not qualified to represent $500 million fucking industries. Not industries, sites alone. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just like, holy shit, man.
Welcome to the world.
It's like, you know, it's somebody handed...
It happens more and more, Dave, with like crypto VCs and shit like that.
Yes,
like
it
happens
absolutely.
Every single day nowadays.
It truly feels like the entire industry is like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You know, mom and dad are out of town for the day. We're going to skip school, drive the fucking Ferrari, and run it into a goddamn telephone pole.
Oh, did you say something about rice?
Rice?
fuck, what's his first name? Kansas City, the one that just got...
What?
The wide receiver for the... Damn it, I ruined it.
Rashid Rice?
Rashid. God damn it. Yeah. Anyway. So
that was close. Good for you.
Yeah, a little context. So they are in the money right now.
Okay.
And he has 187 big blinds.
Is Tice still in?
What's his name on here again?
It's Tice something, I think.
Yeah. Oh, LT Tyson.
Yeah, that might be it. Okay. Well, Conrad's looking that up.
Gotta learn the alphabet again.
We have a CSA preempting the CSA. Brent Hanks is at the final table.
Let's go.
Brent. GL.
You have a piece?
No.
Wow. No. He asked you and you're like, I'm too poor, man.
No, he didn't even ask.
He's got Jeff Platt now.
Maybe J-Mo bought some.
J-Mo might have bought some. He didn't ask me. I'm a little salty about that, but it's okay. I'm still rooting for the guy. 9 left. He has about 30 big blinds. Let's knows how to navigate that like old Papa Hank.
That's right.
Let's get a little top three for the kid here, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, makes the trip worthwhile for him for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's televised too. I think it's on Poker Go's YouTube, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that. It might be on Champions YouTube, but I'm pretty positive it's on Poker Go's YouTube. So anybody who wants to follow along, Mr. B. Hanks himself, he was supposed to be there commentating. Got out of that gig real fast.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the play?
Yeah.
If you get booked for commentary and then you final table the event, this way you don't have to commentary.
It's a beautiful, beautiful win-win situation.
I think Rast did the same thing in Triton a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. I did it in Daytona. I got hired to go there for a 5-day like meetup game type of stuff. And the big thing was I was going to do commentary on their main event.
How do you just tell the people that hired you, hey, you know what? I'm actually just going to go play.
No. That was part of the gig. They wanted me in the event. They just didn't want me to get second.
So they expected you to just bust at some point and then come jump in the booth.
I had like endless bullets. Like it was a 3-flight day one. I could play them all. And they wanted me to, don't get me wrong. Me running deep is also very good.
Yeah, they wanted me to get 10th every time.
No, I don't know about 10th. Because like, what's going to get more eyes on the final table? Me playing it or me commentating
it? Good point.
Right. So I think they want me to finish in the top three. And I want to finish in the top three because I don't want to do commentary. So it was a beautiful endeavor. I actually lost heads up to one of my students, which was really fantastic. Big shout out.
We have a CSA.
What's the CSA? Let's hear it.
TM Tice is no longer with us.
Oh no. Did he cash?
No, he did not cash. Oh, God. He lost his 763rd.
I hope he sold that stack to JMO. Man, I hope he sold it all. He came in with chips. He had like 70 blinds. I mean, that had to be worth, you know, like 5K.
It's a lot of money, man.
Yeah, hopefully he got like, you know, a little bit of markup on that.
Life-changing money.
God damn. R.I.P. Tice. Well, hey, good luck at Scoop out there, buddy.
Yeah, you know, have some fun.
You're missing all these wonderful podcasts. We miss you. We hope you're out there grinding, getting that Scoop grind. All right, let's talk a little bit about this JMO situation. This is a weird one to me. First and foremost, let's get something going. What did it look like to like you, LaManna, like an outsider who has no context?
I have no idea what's
going
on.
He still hasn't looked at it.
Right.
He has no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
Something happened. JMO did something, and then he started barking, and then I was like, I don't know.
Okay.
I can't be bothered with all this stupid bullshit by these stupid trolls on Twitter. Like, I don't care about JMO or anything about him or anything he has to say. So, like, I just, you know, kind of avoided it. Maybe I should have looked because, you know, I'm on a podcast. We're probably going to talk about it, but I don't give a shit.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that's a fair statement, sir. I asked because I really went way out of my way this time to minimize my responses, just only reply to things that I thought were not truthful. And I don't want to say de-escalate. I definitely wasn't trying to de-escalate, but I was trying to, like, meme the whole situation. And I'm pretty sure the narrative got spun very quickly that I picked this fight. So,
of course, that every time, Burke.
Which is
fall for it every time, every single time.
So I want to give some context, and I actually just kind of want to clear the air because I think I actually understand where things went awry this time around. Which is rare. Usually I'm a little bit more confused as to what happened, but I think I know the point at things where things went awry. So this tweet came out initially Saturday around 3:30 PM from JMO, and it said, "What up, old man Burks? My guys in the streets telling me that you talking mad shit about me in the daily roundtable of minimum wage poker squad."
I do not make minimum wage. I just want to make that clear.
"Who don't have anything better to do with their time that you call a podcast. Let's chill with the slander, whatever it was." Now, obviously, this implies that he hasn't even watched it. And I meme it and I go, okay, your guy. Because, like, you know, that seems like an appropriate response to just say, like, okay, you seem to be very concerned about the things we're saying, but you're shirking it off onto, like, oh, I got minions in the street that are watching you, and you better watch your mouth when you're talking about me, kind of thing. So, you know, I just kind of memed it, and then I said, like, look, I just said you're a weird internet personality, and I called you an idiot for, you know, talking shit to Landon for 2+ years, and then hopping on the bandwagon wanting 500K of action on him. I said, good luck winning this Landon case. Get out of your feelings. And then it all unraveled. Mm-hmm. So for context, because I want to like really display the timeline for everybody of like how things occurred. Let's go ahead and roll the clip of what was actually said on the podcast. And you guys can be the judge if we were way out of line.
Is D-Negs. JMO's like, just get a loan from D-Negs.
I don't know anybody who is a stranger individual with his internet personality than JMO.
I actually love him.
He's honestly,
what's there to love?
He's an asshole, like, to everybody, but
it's pretty run of the mill for crypto people, though.
Yeah, I could see that. It's just funny that he took, like, he spends so much time shit posting in threads that are just like no.
Get a loan from Uncle D-Negs.
Like, he spends time shit posting in threads that, like, nobody with any amount of reasonable respect for their time would ever post in. and then like comes out of the woodwork and just totally contradicts. Like, he spent so much time shitting on me for booking bets on Landon at whatever price people would offer. Uh-huh. He's like, oh, this guy's just so poor. He's out here farming and like, he's just poor. He's so poor. And then out of the blue, he's just like, I'll take 500K on Landon. You know, it's like, okay, well, we all just know what a sharp side is.
He just always, you know, he just sees a spot.
So did I.
Yeah, okay. But you got to be able to change your mind.
He talks his shit, but you know, he saw a spot. He's ready for it.
He's an idiot. Okay, so the idiot count was one. I admit to that one. I definitely did call him an idiot once, but I kind of said it tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, he's an idiot kind of thing. Not really thinking that this was going to cause any fire. I thought that, like, you know, his hypocrisy here would be obvious to even him, and somebody who goes by the name Cunty Cakes probably isn't going to take too much offense to being an internet hypocrite. Boy, was I wrong. Let me tell you. So I posted that clip or whatever for him to see, and Glantz replied to it and said something to the effect of, you can't really be upset if that's all they said. That's probably the nicest thing a group of people have ever said on a podcast about you. Somebody gaslit you if that's all that it was. And JMO replied, I actually didn't see the clip until just now. I was just ranting at Landon for talking shit about me, and he's not even there. Someone just told me Burks called me an idiot a bunch of times, and I was in the mood to cause chaos. But all good. I even gave the kid a charity bonus. I'm a man of the people. You know that. So at that point, it seemed like everything was pretty resolved. He was of the impression that Landon and I were just like dunking on him on the podcast for whatever reason. And he had this like axe to grind with Landon dating all the way back to the Perkins challenge, because I guess when Landon was preparing, he was playing some of JMO's horses, or he was looking for action or something along those lines, and something got misconstrued, or, you know, whatever, something was out there where JMO took offense to Landon's approach to getting action. I truly don't even know what it was, but you know, understandably he was offended. We're not really sure why, but like, he had some axe to grind with Landon. So he thought Landon was talking shit. He thought I was calling him an idiot a bunch. Put the clip up. Landon wasn't even on the pod that day. I called him an idiot once, but it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. It wasn't really meant to be hurtful or anything along those lines. And it looks like we buried the hatchet at that point. So it's like, okay, it seems as though we're getting somewhere at this point. And now there isn't a whole lot left to discuss. I wake up the next morning to like two dozen at mentions from JMO. And I'm just like, what in the hell has happened here? So what I think happened, this is where now I'm trying to, you know, kind of dissect and piece the puzzle together, but I think this is a pretty accurate one. So what happened between that point in the back and forth and the next day was that somewhere within all of this context was JMO bought a piece of Landon's final table action at the WPT at ICM. Mm-hmm. I had no clue that that's who bought the action. You know, I knew that Landon was trying to sell a small chunk, and I knew that he was going through friends and his network first. But like, I'm super hands off whenever it comes to the backing arrangement. I came in late. I don't play MTTs. I don't have a big enough piece to be like financially incentivized to like lord over this group and like try to micromanage or anything along those lines. And I just trust the other three that are elite MTT players to make all of the best decisions whenever it comes down to how we're making money in these types of things. The only thing that I said whenever the desire to sell like came up was, I'm happy to do whatever is in Landon's best interest, but from my perspective, this backing deal being split four ways already, and Landon having a 50% makeup deal, is that we're all super risk off already.
Yeah, right.
So let it fucking ride. Like, I have no desire personally to sell, but if it's in Landon's best interest and he has a strong desire to sell a piece and he reaps the benefit of that, fine. Don't care. Go nuts. It's a normal business transaction to make within this space. There's nothing to be ashamed of, obviously. It's no different than organizing a small chop with six left and then playing out for the rest of the prize pool, yada, 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 yada. Okay. What I think occurred here now is I'm none the wiser that JMO bought the piece. And now, over that time period where I was sleeping, I think JMO got really fucking hot over the fact that we were memeing him on the podcast while he was buying action off of the staking group. Mm-hmm. And I think that he views the action buying as a fun gamble or sweat and not really a high EV spot. And I think that's very reasonable. It's like, yeah, you know, ICM is not the most accurate model. Like, maybe it's overvaluing your landed stack. Maybe it's undervaluing. You're kind of just gambling, right?
He has to get second to make money, basically, right?
He breaks dead even at third.
Yeah.
Or you make, like, a couple hundred bucks, whatever. So, like, that all makes sense. But when I wake up to these two dozen mentions, this doesn't click in my head because I'm not aware that he's the buyer. Now, I very quickly become aware that he's the buyer as it kind of like trickles up the chain. And he just is on a rampage trying to get me to apologize for this little 1 minute clip in the podcast that was not meant to be a personal attack, was not meant to embarrass him in any sort of capacity, but he feels disrespected because he's fronting a lot of money to gamble on our horse. And why would you ever speak poorly about somebody who is willing to back your guy, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's like my context is very different than his. My context is JMO's been shitposting about Landon for 2 years, just trashing him every step of the way. My context was JMO is deep in the weeds of every single thread that I was involved in whenever it came to buying more crossbook action for the summer, and he's in there shit posting all along the way too. So my only context is JMO has beef with us, right? Seems weird to me now that he's like just totally pulled a 180, but you know, whatever. It wasn't like it wasn't like deeply rooted beef. It wasn't like me and Doug beef. It was just like it felt like he had something shitty to always say, but I know him as a shit poster, so it's kind of whatever.
Yeah.
So the last thing on earth I felt like I needed to do was apologize. And he puts out a tweet that says, before we get to this one, sorry. He puts out a tweet that says, it's funny that this could all be avoided if Berkey's ego wasn't too big to just bow down. Now, he's since deleted that tweet, and understandably so, because it's the most egotistical tweet a person can make.
I actually responded to that one.
But it's just like, okay, what are we doing here? But I think that this is where everything really diverted, because it put me on the offensive now, and it put him further on the offensive, and we're speaking completely past one another, because he wants to be respected and, I don't want to say put on a pedestal, but he wants to be at least like, I don't know, thought of as an equal in some sort of capacity, or thought of as a wealthy. Here's the thing, man. Like, I didn't grow up in a situation where I respect money as a person's character, right? And so, like, how they spend it is up to them. If they're investing in something, I assume they believe it to be a good investment. And in no way, shape, or form did this ever feel like a fucking favor, right? So he's, like, now going off on this tangent about how he's giving 100K action to the horse. It's like, well, like, look, let's break it down. First of all, you get a 35K rebate immediately because six places worth 140K. So if you're buying 25% action, here's 35,000 right off the top. Mm-hmm. So it's not a 100K investment. It's a $65,000 investment. And, you know, the likelihood that he finishes sixth is very low. So it's like the risk here is actually not that high. And I said this to our group. I was like, listen, like, we don't need a third party person investing here. Like, between me having a piece of the stake already and it not being that big of an investment, like, I'll just fucking take it, because not only do I get the 35K rebate off the top, but I also have a quarter of Landon's action, which means that I get a further rebate even if he finishes six. So it's only like 45K risk to me, or 50K risk to me, yeah, or whatever. And that's like low probability that ever even happens, because he would have to get exactly six. It's like, now every time he finishes fifth or higher, I'm only risking like 25K or 30K or whatever. So it's just kind of like, whatever. Like, this doesn't have to devolve the way that it does. But it's too late, because now he's gone and offended everybody, right? So he says, daily reminder, Berkey is a bitch loser. Okay, whatever. That's fine. Don't care. Take shots at me. Literally means nothing. He's not a person that I have any care in the world for what he has to say. It's like, I respect what JMO's done. He's made a mint in fucking crypto. He's probably extremely sharp in that space. But, you know, I'm not going to let him just like run around bashing anything and everything in sight whenever it comes to things that I'm affiliated with. So unprovoked, he just goes, green light, here it goes. Squad is a bunch of fucking losers. I asked a group of high stakes MTT regs about the Landon versus Beckman bet, and the consensus was Landon was a mediocre reg, but Beckman was a fish who didn't know how to use a computer. Bet is super high variance and edges probably a few percentage points either way, but you make a huge spectacle about how you got your boy Landon versus D-Megs for a huge total for big money when maybe 10K will change hands. Congrats, bud. It's like, okay, like, what spectacle, number one? Number two, sure, on average, and I've said this multiple times on the podcast, on average, not a lot of money is going to change hands. But on the outliers, high six figures, low seven figures could easily change hands if you have the vast majority of this. And it's like, I have additional side bets as well that are very high. So it's like, yeah, my overall exposure probably relatively low on average, but at the extremes, it's extremely high. And I'm not bragging or anything along those lines. That's just the facts. Also, a few commented randomly how your training site is universally trash and the Ogre Nobody mental health mat can be replaced with an iOS app for $10 that just reads PO outputs. Not my words, but I paraphrased and added a little flavor. I'm not going to dox sources, but if you put up a 100K bet that I'm lying, that a large handful of the best and most respected players think your squad is trash, besides Landon, who's mid, we can do some business. I just think you're a straight bitch, since I know who actually backs you, guy, from the details of the Perkins Challenge up until today, and boy, your exposure to P&L is awfully low for a guy who spent a month angling Twitter bets for a few percentage edge on a stupid dick-waving crossbook. Considering you're supposed to be high-stakes cash game, dude, I could go into further detail of... I can't read his English. Let me know if that's good to go, whatever. These are the areas where it's like, I'm just so utterly confused at the angle that these people are coming from, other than like just raw emotion and anger. Yeah. It's like when public bets come out, nobody's trying to take the fucking worst of it. Okay. And right. Nobody is ever trying to offer like straight up fair. If I was offering fair of what I thought the crossbook was, I would be booking Landon at minus odds, not plus. But why the fuck would I do that when the general consensus is willing to fire out six figures at Landon plus money?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have 150K straight up capped bet with 100% crossbook where I'm getting plus 110 on Landon. Why wouldn't I accept that? That's insane.
Right.
What are you talking, like, at what point do guys like this, people who consider themselves to be incredibly sharp, a guy who fucking trades handbags on the margins... because he knows which ones hold their value versus which ones don't. At what point are you just willing to take a bath because you want to like have some ego involved and say like, oh, that's my dude. I'll book him at minus 200. I don't give a shit. Fuck money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like nobody's out here dick waving or anything on those lines. If anything, the only funny part is how not sharp people who are willing to throw hundreds of thousands of dollars at this bet are. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to accept that the same way I accepted Airball just fucking punting into me. You know, it's like at some point you just have to accept gifts and it's okay. I also think it's just like insane the way that like people like him and Daniel and others in the past, Doug being another good example, they love to not just... none of them ever trash my character. Like, attack my character if you have a problem with me, right? Instead, what they do is they try to attack what's ancillary to me. And it always ends up being like some shot fired at Matt, who's one of the most phenomenal educators in this, right, in this space, right? And they try to frame it as, oh, he teaches low level stuff that's not worth anything. It's like, buddy, who the fuck do you think the audience is?
Right.
Build the $10 iOS app that reads PO outputs then, mm-hmm, right? Do it, because I'll pay for it. I don't believe that you can get it done, right? Fact of the matter is, people like Matt Hunt, people like Brokus, even a lot of like the guys on Jonathan Little's staff, it's like nobody is out here paying for coaching from the highest level professionals, because the people that they would be speaking to is one tier down. And the vast majority of those guys have a peer group that they can just bounce things off of instead. Right. The majority of the audience that's looking for any level of training are entry level, recreational, and people who are stuck in the fucking grind, or in the muck, if you will, trying to get out and make some semblance of a living at this career. Chris Brewer is a fantastic brain when it comes to poker, maybe one of the best. And sure, in a one-on-one setting, there might not be anybody who you get that's better. But if you're going to task him with teaching 10,000 people, I promise you there are people who are better at educating. Because the gap is too fucking wide. You know? It's just going to be really hard and pedantic to him to have to reduce everything that he knows down to like single-syllable words that are conveying what EV even is. Right? Like when you're a high level guy, there's so much that's already set in stone that is just inherent to your understanding that the people below you that aren't winning or aren't at your level can't grasp. So it's like, sure, if you're a high stakes guy who's looking for coaching, SolverWise probably not for you, but we didn't build it for you.
Right.
So I don't give a fuck that you're critical of it at all. And it's like a guy like D-Negs taking all these shots at our fucking... You're not learning from SolverWise, first of all. I bet you could, because based off of the way you play, I'm seeing enough errors that we could teach you not to fold nines on an ace-high board versus fucking one big blind bet. But you don't want to learn from that source. You'd rather learn from Chance or from Foxen or from Nick Petrangelo. And that's fine, because those guys are your fucking peers. Mm-hmm. You should. But like... if you're grinding $200 or $400 average buy-ins, Chanson, Foxen, Nick Petrangelo, those aren't the guys that are going to get you to the next step. It's people that are in the fucking weeds with you. It's the guys who are winning in those fields.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true in almost all spaces. Whenever you get taught physics in high school, it's not fucking Neil Tyson DeGrasse. Whatever the fuck Neil his DeGrasse name Tyson, is. Whatever. Yeah. Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's not him at the fucking head of the class. You know? It's going to be Pershing Coleman.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mr. P. So, I'm ranting at this point, but I'm saying all of this because I do feel a sense of needing to point out like how way out of line he took things in a situation that from the way that I can see is just a clear and utter misunderstanding. Like, it was just clearly me not knowing that he had a piece. But even if I did know that he had a piece, I would have maybe just been, like, less tongue-in-cheek with my initial response. Mm-hmm. And just been like, bro, here's the clip. I didn't say anything. Like, somebody's giving you misleading information.
His guy.
Yeah, his guy's on the street. Maybe I would have, like, tried a lot harder to de-escalate it. Because it's like... you know, we're doing business together. Like, there's no reason to have this spat. But like, after seeing the last 2 days unfold, who the fuck would want to do business with him? He aired out every single person. Every single person involves business without naming names, right? Like, he aired out Landon with naming names. He aired out me naming names. He didn't air out Landon's other three backers, but like a lot of people are in the know and know who they are. He didn't air out the person who brought the deal to him to begin with. Like, that's the other thing. It's not like we directly went to JMO,
right?
Like, we went through an intermediate source that happened to know JMO buys and, you know, approached him. It's just like there's so much going on here that he's out of line for. And then to top it all off, he just spends an entire day calling Jamie Staples fat. For no good reason.
Right.
Right? Like, none whatsoever. He's just out here basically saying, like, yo, this guy's been shitting on me for years. And I respond three times, and now all of a sudden all the crypto bros are calling me the asshole. And that's the way it feels. It feels like there are so many people on Twitter that can be on the offensive all the time. And the second that you clap back in any sort of way of standing up for yourself or you know, just basically saying, like, yo, enough's enough, then everybody comes out of the woodwork and just calls you a little cuck boy, right? And it's like, you know, Jamie's like such a nice, more importantly, thoughtful individual. Like, if you actually spend some time consuming his content, be it Twitter or YouTube or streams or whatever, it's very clear that he puts thought into the things that he says. It's very clear that he's a reflective individual. And, you know, he's also very self-aware. It's not like he's out here thinking to himself like, oh, yeah, I'm representative of success. Like, I'm exactly what it looks like to be the guy who made it. It's like, no, this guy has been fucking grinding his dick off and being very transparent about the ups and downs with what comes with that. You know, he had this big Perkins bet where he had life-changing money and a life-changing event take place, and there was fallout from that, and like, he's been open and candid about it. It's like, it's crazy to not support that. Mm-hmm. But instead, this guy just absolutely shitposts all the time, which is fine, that could be your character, but there's fallout from that. You know, you're not going to be liked. And people are going to call you an idiot sometimes on a podcast.
Right.
You can't get all up in your feels because that happens.
Yeah, it's insane. All the shit that he says nonstop on Twitter, and then somebody calls him out and he's just like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that.
Well, right. You know, at least we got this tweet from Soheb. He says, a bunch of high stakes regs are losing their minds in a Discord server over whether Brian the Turtle and Ollie Melissa from the YouTube Poker Variety Show are on their level. are on their level, should not put this big of a smile on my face. So
it's also just like, you know, no offense, I'm sure whoever the high stake pros are that JMO's talking to are fucking legit crushers. Mm-hmm. But I'm also sure that they're like just idiots themselves. And I don't mean this in a dumb, I don't mean this in they're a dumb person. I don't mean this that they're unintelligent. I mean that their EQ is one. Much like JMO's, right? Like, that also can make you an idiot. When you spend all of your time sitting around, like, criticizing people that somehow you've qualified as being beneath you, but at the same token, you feel the need to, like, ensure that they know that they're beneath you in some sort of capacity, it's just reeking of insecurity and arrogance and ego and all this other shit that I get accused of all the time. But, and, you know, probably guilty of in some capacity. It's like, it's a competitive game in a competitive environment where people want the recognition. But it's like, yo, if you're grinding fucking 215s in your basement 24/7 and you're the biggest killer online, take the money. Just take the money, because you're not going to get the glory alongside of it. That's just not how this community works. And we've known that from day one, you know? So it's like, I don't really know what to, I don't really know what to say to combat all of that. And I truly don't care. Right, like, at no point should people be trying to impress a random collection of elite, arrogant assholes. That, and like, I feel like that's, you know, I always double back to this, but I feel like that's Daniel's stance in a lot of ways too, where it's like, either you kind of kiss the ring a bit and acknowledge everything that he's been to, which, for what it's worth, I've gone out of my way many times to say this. He is one of the most important people to this space by a long shot. Yeah. But it's because of that importance to this space that it's so disappointing whenever he doesn't do the things that can bring people together, but rather chooses to divide. When he falls into that insecure, sensitive, you took a shot at a hand that I played, so I'm going to ruin you forever type of mindset. And that's a lot of what we saw here with JMO. And it's like, buddy, at the end of the day, you guys can all take as many fucking shots as you want, but just once, just one goddamn time, I want somebody to post something that I'm embarrassed about. Just once, just one fucking time. Let me read something and go, oh my God, no, I can't believe that got out. Because you're not going to find it. Mm-hmm. You're just not. Like, you know, I understand that you guys probably didn't get there by doing things right and doing right by people, but like, some of us do. And we'll take a fucking huge hit at our bottom line in order to make sure that that's the case. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. The end all be all of this is just like, I can't for the life of me understand how somebody who does so much high stakes business operates and conducts himself in this way. Personally, like, I don't care if he buys a piece of land or not. Like I said, I'll take it if he doesn't. I think it's insane that anybody would want to do business with him. Like, to just have this dangling over your head at all times where it's just like, if you guys don't treat me right, I'm going to fucking air you out. And it's like, okay, like, what are we doing here? Why are we doing why would I ever want somebody like this investing in me in some sort of, imagine I'm like playing 501k and I have to sell a quarter to this fucking Muppet, you know? And it's like, then I play a hand bad on stream or something and like, he's just trashing me all over the internet and I can't clap back because he bought a quarter.
Right.
It's just like, who wants that? It's just no way to live. And I understand that that's the way that this this community has kind of shaped itself over the last few years, but I promise you, there's better ways. It's not even remotely close. I'll end it on a joke before we get to In the Muck. Poker Roasters, he dropped a good one. Sorry, Bonomo, you're the fallout collateral damage here, but it's just too funny. JMO is currently dropping so many bombs on OnlyFriends that Justin Bonomo has changed his Twitter icon to a flag of Matt Berkey.
That's pretty good.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Poker Roasters, he has a lot of of memes. They don't all hit.
No, they don't. But he's a sick individual. This one hit. I think that
he's a volume guy.
Really like his account. I've come to the conclusion that I really like his account, and you know,
I wouldn't follow because like it's like he's workshopping in real time.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's like going to a comedian's. It's like when a comedian is like just starting to frame out his new tour.
But he's trying, man. He's out there. He's shooting.
I get it. But you're getting sheer volume. Like I just want the ones that go viral like this.
They're really fucked.
You know, I want the good ones to just bleed through into my timeline. It's like, yo, that's funny as fuck.
Yeah, some of them are really good.
That was absolutely funny as fuck. All right, let's get to an In the Muck.
All right, we got another user submission. This comes from our Discord, of course, and it comes from a man named Josh, who's playing in a 1-3 at his local casino. And, you know, he gets the birds. He's got the aces. So it goes call under the gun one also limps in. And now we see a raise from the hijack to 12. He decides to 3-bet with the ace of clubs, ace of diamonds to 35. And it folds back around to the original raiser, who decides to call. We start the hand with 350, and we are covered. Now the flop comes down, queen of clubs, 10 of spades, 9 of diamonds. We are met with a check. We decide to bet quarter pot, which is 20 into 80. Now we get check raised to 45, so a small check raise, and we decide to call. Turn is actually the 3 of spades. This is a... misclick on my part. So it's actually the 3 of spades. And the villain just jams into us. So we have 270 and there's 170 in the pot. And we think about it for a while and we decide to just pay and call. And we are shown a set of nines. River's a brick and we lose. Now we're wondering, you know, is this a just pay spot with the overbet? Does he have enough bluffs? Does he have enough, you know, equitable hands where we can call? Wasn't sure.
I think we put ourselves in a shitty situation betting flop.
Betting the, yeah, I mean,
I think we can just check back flop.
Right. I disagree.
No?
Yeah, so I disagree.
I do think there are some other things to talk about besides just the turn action. Yeah, like the flop, I mean, I think maybe in the 3-bet pot, you're probably going to be betting more often. Maybe if it's a single raise pot, you can check back, but... Mm.
Well, yes, I very much agree with that. I do think that, well, here's the issue. It depends on your opponent. So maybe I could get behind checking back at a much, much higher frequency, based off of the fact that he doesn't play leads, but he should have a lot of leads here.
I don't think you see many leads in the 1-3 pool here. Correct. Ever. Right. As a matter of fact, you can put that at zero.
Yeah, in especially in a 3-bet pot.
Right, so I think if he like never leads, then aces is a pretty nice one to check back, and I would just bet kings instead. And so, like, yeah, I can strongly get behind that. I do think that the sizings are all fine. On flop, I think the check raise size is good. I think the turn jam is probably never a thing, and that would make me want to pay, but aces is like the worst hand.
You said you think the check raise size is good?
Yeah.
Just click?
You don't think you should go a little bit bigger just to...
No.
I thought it
said... If he's going to jam turn...
Turn, I don't think turn jam is a thing. I think turn is like B40, maybe pot at most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking if he makes...
Or like whatever 2E is. Yeah, I think turn is 2E. Almost certainly.
If he plays flop as 2E, you don't think playing flop is 2E, though?
Flop would be like 3E.
Okay.
But It's just a super, super coordinated board. So you're check raising really linearly.
Okay.
Right. So you're not going to choose a polarized size. You're not saying king jack or nothing.
Yeah. Right.
Because like your nothing should be like ace jack.
Ace jack. Yeah.
Right. Like that's not a hand that you want to face a three bet jam with. Or like, you know, jack 10 suited. There's just like so many viable check raises. And that's why you have so many viable leads. You have all the two pair, you have all the sets, you have all the straights. And your opponent has a lot of those as well, but you know, you don't want to, basically you don't want to apply a ton of pressure to the over pairs because it just makes everything else play very easily. Right? Like check raising in general and then leading again, like basically your value range is trying to attack jacks, kings, and aces.
Mm-hmm.
So your value wants to get paid by jacks, kings, and aces.
So that's why,
which means your bluffs are already making them indifferent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's already making jacks, kings, and aces indifferent. King, yeah. Queen, ace, king, or sorry, ace, queen, ace, king, right? All those hands are already going to naturally become indifferent through your aggression, which means that when you go larger, they just all shift more just towards funnels. A fold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they only have fucking sets, two pairs, correct. And king, jack.
Correct. And that becomes really bad, yeah. for your check raising range because you want to be able to get max value with 10-9.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the turn is where this thing goes awry. Jam is for sure just not a thing. It's way, way, way too big on this texture. I don't know what I would do with it. I think I would just pay with aces, but I think it might be bad.
It feels bad.
Well, because like it's probably, I know I would right never there, fold kings.
Yeah, right. if you're like, I don't know what I should do, it's probably just fold.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like 10-9.
You know?
That's the issue is that like, I would always call kings because even if I'm beaten, I'm not against king jack really ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just
and
have,
so I have a lot of equity.
Yeah, you have, yeah.
But when I have aces, I can just be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that feels very problematic. I also think
for this size, I don't think you can be dead. That's the other thing.
He could just have like king jack of hearts.
Yeah.
I mean,
just panic jam.
Be dead.
I mean, yeah, sure, but I don't think we're going to see it that much.
Not that much, but like...
You got the nizzy nuts.
You'll see it more than when you have kings.
Sure.
And like, here's the other thing. Is like, I just don't think he has, like, ace-jack of spades here.
Okay.
And if he does, he has exactly one combo of ace-jack of spades.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, now we have to find the other bluffs.
Man, for the size, though, it feels like it would be ace-jack of spades.
But so it's only it's one. It's weird. Literally
I only
one combo.
I understand it's one combo, but it just, you know... Like, if we're just looking at the size, like, what hand wants to do this?
Right, like, that's... I mean, look, maybe he's just doing it, like, yeeting it off with king, queen of spades, queen, jack of spades.
Mm-hmm.
But that, to me, seems like the type of hand that does not get overplayed this way.
Yeah.
Because it turns so much equity. Like, mm-hmm. that, to me, is the type of hand that isn't afraid of rivers. So it finds the half pot or just, whatever 2E is.
And just to reiterate, the 3 is a 3 of spades on the turn.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, like, those hands to me, I feel like don't get overplayed. And I feel like what would get overplayed would be like the nuts with no spade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, king jack of hearts might no get spade. Overplayed. A set might get overplayed. Bottom two for sure might get overplayed.
Yeah.
And that becomes like really problematic to aces specifically. So,
yeah, like, it almost just feels like you're dead all the time. And like, when we do have kings, we call because we are alive. But
yeah,
it doesn't feel fucking great. This feels like real shit right here.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with all of that.
You kind
of
just want to rip up aces.
And I think like them. I would rather just have a queen too. Like blocking queen 10 is so nice. You know?
Yeah. And that's what he said. He was kind of worried about certain, like the hands that he was worried about. He said some thoughts. In game, I thought, or he said in game when I got jammed on, I was pretty sure that the low jack would have 4-bet queens and 10s. Which I don't know about 10.
With these sizings, I don't think that's true.
I'm actually not sure.
I was thinking it was only nines and king jack suited, maybe some queen 10 suited for value. So like, yeah.
I think he's too narrow on what his opponent's range is.
Well, there's some 10-9 off in there.
Thought he could be jamming ace queen, scared of backdoor spades.
No, he's hoping he's jamming ace queen.
Queen jack suited.
He's hoping those hands are jamming, but like, I don't even think queen jack check raises, but honestly, like, for what it's worth, it's weird for me to deduce because the flop check raise size is really good, mm-hmm. which would lead me to believe this guy knows what he's doing. And then the term jam size is really bad.
Yeah.
So now I don't think he
knows. Yeah, I mean, it honestly makes me feel like it's an older gentleman that just like flopped the nuts, like, or what they think is the nuts.
Right.
And like, that's what it feels like. And like, right, the turn is like, okay, there's a flush draw now. Let's just get it all in.
Yeah.
And like, let's see what's up.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if like the turn were instead like an eight, he would just check.
Wow. I want to fucking see if we could pick out the player profile through their lines.
That would be fun. That would be a fun exercise.
So much fun doing that every time. Just like picking out the player profile through their lines.
That really would be fun.
I really would say that this is an older gentleman here.
Yeah, I would have said that it's like a 30-something shit reg.
Okay. Because you like the turn, the flop size.
The flop size is too good, and then the turn jam is like bad, and I think that that's like oftentimes people study flop and not turn, but I think your read is actually really good.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's
a cagey older dude.
Once we get to the turn, it's like, nah.
Because he's like check raising a hand that has like infinite equity, but then like the turn is bad, like an eight, and he just shuts down.
Yeah.
You know, he's like top set, and he just like checks the turn eight. You know, because like he'd rather just check call it.
But when he sees the three of spades, it's like, oh,
right, yeah, I don't want this guy sucking out of me.
We're all in, buddy. Today.
Right. I do kind of like that read. All right, let's check and see what the Wiz says. And I'll have to adjust because, you know, as you can see here, it does play a ton of leads. So like 40% leads.
Wow.
How much?
40%. I mean, he's really condensed to this board.
No, he really is, but I don't think
Sorry. My apologies. No, that's the imposition C bet.
Thank God.
That makes me more sense.
I was about to have a heart attack. 40%?
40 is a lot. Yeah, you're right. Okay, about 17%.
That's way more. Okay, fine.
He's
more reasonable.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah, he's still incredibly condensed to this board. You can see he doesn't even have Queen Jack suited in theory. In practice, he probably does.
Has it in full.
Yeah, probably.
And half the players at the table have it at the offsuit variety in full tilt.
Right. So you can see where he's choosing to lean on with his leads. It's mostly going to be hands that directly interact with the board, specifically with the sets. So the sets and the straights. Ace, queen, ace, jack are going to mirror queens and king jack. Pocket jacks is leading, you know, basically kind of setting its own price and potentially being able to pivot into a bluff later if need be. Otherwise, we'll serve as a future street bluff catcher. Ace 8, same thing, right? Gut shot, trying to basically get a clean turn so that it can fold out ace king. I'm assuming this is with backdoors as well. Yeah, so it's only the backdoor variety. Ace 8 of hearts, pure check. And then you have like other hands that are drawing to the ass end, like 7-6. Again, mostly with the backdoor, a little bit of 7-6 of hearts leads.
I'm surprised to see so many leads by King Jack suited. Like, you flop the nuts and now you want to bet?
They don't want to ever go check. Like, they
the hand should just check back a lot. Like, as we can see, as played, it checks back 60% of the time.
Yeah, you never want the check. We want to put money in, and any hand that they want to continue with that, like, probably checks back, probably call a bet.
The issue with checking is that you can see how much of the impositions range is made up of suited aces. And on a rainbow board, these hands have a ton of desire to realize their equity, right? They want to be able to turn nut flush draws and shit like that. So they're checking back at a really high frequency. Same is true of like some of the King X and the weaker pairs.
Can
like
you do me a favor? Can you put the lead in?
This is with the lead.
Okay.
Oh, if he leads? No,
yes, I want to see with the lead.
How they respond.
I want to see how the Ace X responds.
What is the lead size, by the way? Is it like half?
40%.
Okay.
That's why I got confused, because they both bet 40%. So yeah, all the suited aces seven and below fold.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So you deny equity to all of these backdoor hands. Same thing with the king highs. Mm-hmm. You just deny equity to this massive chunk of range. And then basically, if you have a straight draw or better, you're forced to continue. Mm-hmm. So ace eight suited with a backdoor is going to continue as a mix.
Yeah, it's a fun board because anything eight or above connects.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because like this is a good nuance to understand. Ace 10, no backdoor, has to pure fold.
Ace 10, no backdoor.
So ace 10 of hearts, pure fold.
That makes sense.
But ace 10 with backdoor flush draw, pure call.
Yeah.
It's because it can't, like, it can't hold, withhold.
It just can't improve. It just can't improve well enough. You have other 10x. Like, you just have king 10, jack 10.
Which can improve. Yeah,
that can all improve in meaningful ways. And then, yeah, everything else with, like, you know, backdoors.
Even when you improve with an ace, you might still be up against a straight, a set, ace, queen.
Right. And imposition does play some raises, about 8% raises. King just yeets it. Same with king, queen. Just, like, all in. mainly because he's blocked King Jack, which is the biggest chunk of the lead range. And these are just driving a ton of equity against hands that can be all in. Like, these hands are just doing incredibly well. I think King Queen probably gets Ace Queen to fold, if I had to guess. Maybe not in full, but I bet it makes it indifferent. Yeah, Ace Queen becomes a mix. So that's probably what's driving a lot of the King Queen jam. In any event, this is La La Land, because none of this is actually what's going to happen. So let's see what happens in real life. This is going to be a pure check. Now you can see quarter is used, but very sparingly. Only 20% c-bet whenever we face no leads.
Yep.
So your instinct was right, Conrad. Checking back aces, very good. Almost never bets, and if you pure check them, totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Connie knows.
So yeah, Conrad was really sharp there. Kings, much, much higher bet frequency. Mm-hmm. You can see even the sets are checking here quite a bit. Queens.
I mean, I just imagine that's to balance the aces. Like,
not exactly. I mean, yes, in part, but they're checking it too high of a frequency to protect aces and ace king. So I think, because like, look how much ace queen bets.
Yeah.
Right. So I think what it is that these hands need no real protection, and you need future street raises. So I think that they play that role. King Jack even trapping here a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that's more of what it's reflective of, is that King Jack traps at such a high frequency. You want other hands that can handle board pair.
Okay.
At that frequency.
Makes sense.
And also just like your overall strategy is just to not bet very often, right? Like, you don't, if you really look, there aren't very many hands that benefit by betting and getting folds. That's kind of like, I think, what the biggest aspect of this is. So like, even a hand like Ace Jack, a lot of the hands that it folds out are just worse, like worse suited aces.
Yeah. Just hands that you beat in general.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're
yeah.
never getting a pair to fold. Really, correct. Cause all the pairs are going to be connected with something else. Like 9-8 is like the worst pair that's going to be here that honestly, it probably might fold 9-8 suited if they have whatever.
Shouldn't but, in like, theory, but yeah, in practice probably.
But yeah, that's,
I mean,
like
first quarter, like definitely should not in theory.
That's the only hand that you're going to get fold, and the rest of the time you're going to be put in a shitty spot.
But like, but like ace three loves to bet because it attacks all these suited aces. Right.
Yeah. So, and it also just doesn't care. It's
well, I'm just saying it gets better to fold. So yeah, like when you bet ace three, you start to see like ace four folds, and then it denies equity to like all this king x type of stuff.
And it just doesn't care if it gets raised because it just goes into fucking muck.
Yeah, yeah. It that's also gives us future street coverage. So like that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
It
just uses hands that they don't care.
Like, right.
If they get mucked, whatever. I mean, if we get raised, we can just muck them. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, so
ace is too good.
Yeah, so yeah, basically it gets ace four and ace five to fold, which is a really good event. Gets ace eight to fold at some frequency, also a really good event. So that's basically what's driving the strategy behind the ace three. In any event, we did choose to bet. So bet here, probably error FC. And I will say that I think this is an error, not an inaccuracy, because of how little we're betting.
Right.
Right. So aces is like the first one that starts checking. And if we're still defaulting to a bet here, it means we're probably just range betting.
I mean, there's a kind of a, what do you call it? I guess the theory behind of not betting aces here. And that's because it just can't really withhold like multiple streets.
Right. It's not a three street hand.
Right, yeah.
It's not a three street hand. And also it just can't really improve outside of making an ace.
Yep.
So yeah, obviously this is a clear spot to check. We can see the raise size is good. So about quarter pot raise. And it's, again, like, as we said, very highly concentrated to hands that touch the board. Not really a ton of bluffing going on here. Ace, Jack, Ace, King. These are the bluffs. A little bit of Ace, 8 with a backdoor. And then 7, 6 suited with a backdoor. But, again, very low frequency. You're just not going to see it very much. So not a lot of bluffing taking place. Like, even King, 10 is reaching for bluffs. When you're choosing, like, middle pair, it's rare you see, like, middle pairs check raising, right? Like, Jack, 10, King, 10, these are check raising about half the time. You don't see that very often.
It's only because of the king and the jack, though, right?
Like, it has a big like, aspect to do with that.
The 10 is there also, but like the king and the jack.
Well, the king and the jack are a big part of it, but there also just isn't much worse in your range.
Oh, yeah, true.
Right?
Yeah.
That has to continue. Yeah. And so like you're going to need some board coverage. So on a board texture like this particularly, you want to be blocking the two pairs. You want to be blocking the sets, and you want to be able to turn clean trips. Mm-hmm. So check raising accomplishes that even for this. Again, we're also choosing the small size.
Yeah.
So that's why we get to be a lot linear. So you can see how linear it is with the check raising. If we went polar, you would see like sets, straights, and then like fives. You know, yeah. Like that's never really going to happen. Okay. Ace is going to be a pure call, of course. We don't really fold that often to the quarter pot. Again, it's just like the no pair, no draws that are going to lay down here. So all of that's pretty standard. Turn three of spades. All in, never an option. Oh, 10-9 suited looks like. But it's never there is the problem.
Yeah, right? It would just play differently. It would.
I think it just pure calls. Yeah, it just pure calls for low jack. That's kind of the issue. So the only hand that has any real incentive to yeet it just doesn't really exist. But, you know, he could have check raised 10-9 and found himself here and now decides to be all in. So, yeah, instinct was pretty good. It's going to 2E almost always. It does have a block size. And I imagine the block size gets used a lot more if the turn's like an 8 instead of a 3. You're not really want to set up a 2E in that situation because now you're playing jack, no jack. So this any bet is polarizing, and you want to be a little bit more linear in your construction, so you'll go smaller. Just a hunch. We can check it after the fact. So yeah, jamming all in, not really a thing. You're giving up way too much. You can see that everything still plays a heavy mix. So even on a brick turn like this, because we were so linear on the flop, we can actually check pretty much all of our strongest hands here at some frequency. Even King Jack's checking like almost half the time.
For argument's sake, I'm curious. If we were to go bigger on turn, is 10-9 suited in there still? Like, will 10-9 suited be in for a jam if we go bigger on flop? I'm sorry, not turn, on flop.
On flop? If we change our raise size?
Yes.
Almost definitely not. The bigger the size, the stronger the hands you need.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to choose your weakest hands.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, I can double check afterwards, I don't think it's important. So yeah, like all in here, not a thing, but we can still see how we're supposed to react to all in. So it basically says like this size is very rarely used and therefore the output will be potentially inaccurate. But I think from a principal standpoint, the response makes a lot of sense. You're calling with the nuts, basically. You're calling with hands that can withstand 2x pot. Mm-hmm. Set of 9, set of 10, set of queens, all pure calls. Jack or King Jack for a straight, pure call. And then you can see hands like King Queen, Kings, and Ace Queen are going to mix. And a lot of this is just going to be the spade variety of King Queen, Ace Queen are obviously going to be pure calls. All the other ones are going to have a heavy mix. Kings, again, is blocking the nuts, which is a big part of the jamming range. In theory, I guess. It also is it's also going to be able to improve when the river's a jack. Pocket jacks actually calls at some frequency, although I probably wouldn't recommend this ever. I think you kind of have to just pure fold jacks.
Yeah.
You're blocking jack 10, you're blocking ace jack, you're blocking, you know, a lot of the hands that should be bluff jamming. Mm-hmm. And though you do have equity, it's like not enough.
Do you think it's reaching for calls?
Oh yeah, of course. Although it's showing that these hands are making some
like the king queen off is what I'm really talking about.
No. Yeah, I guess so.
It's losing.
It's suit dependent. It's winning heart spade. So yeah, it's suit dependent. If you block the queen of spades, it's winning. And like yeah, it's winning piles in the suited variety.
Yeah.
So hearts are good, spades are good. Diamonds are bad. So yeah, you could just like pure call, pure fold based off of your suits.
Matt, can you show me real quick when you say it's winning or losing? What are you looking at here on the...
Right where it says call.
So 19. Here, ace, queen of spades making 19.88 big blinds, which is going to be like roughly, I don't know, 10% pot share. Whereas this one is losing about the same. So it's mixing because it doesn't have enough calls. Basically, it's willing to sacrifice some EV and call these hands some of the time because it can't find enough calls versus jam. Okay. But yeah, obviously, you should just overfold. I mean, that's abundantly clear. And we'll also just have some other hands in this line that the computer doesn't. Like, we'll have King 10 of spades. Or no, sorry, we won't because it's 10 of spades. But we'll have, like, maybe Queen Jack of spades. Oh, it's there. We'll just have it more, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, aces, though, pure fold. Losing a lot.
Yeah.
Can't really justify this one.
He took the just pay too much to heart.
I probably would have paid too. I mean, yeah. When people non-size, it takes a lot of work to jump through hoops to figure out what the hell is driving the non-size. And I think that if you're really in tune to the environment, and also with this texture, it's hard for him to be just losing his mind.
I'd right. kind of disagree with you only because I think this line comes from an older man. And
if an old man jammed here, I'd be way more inclined to fold.
Same.
That's my point. I think, but I'm also reading into the line thinking that it's an older man here. So I
oh,
I
so think, you're saying you think it's a clear fold?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. You're not disagreeing with me then.
Oh, sorry.
I was basically saying that, like, in real time, it becomes difficult to figure out what's driving a non-size. Mm-hmm. And the pieces of the puzzle that we can put together here are that the board texture is what it is, mm-hmm. and there aren't very many low equity hands.
Yep.
So when that's true, it's going to be really challenging for me to arrive at a call, right? Because all I'm going to be able to look at and say is, like, well, I beat ace jack of spades. I beat queen jack of spades. I don't even know if that's going to check raise flop.
I beat
king queen of
for.
Spades and ace queen of spades. Like, I don't know how often these hands are even doing this.
Yeah.
That type of stuff. I just wouldn't want to make the call here basically saying, like, I put you on ace jack of spades, I call.
Yeah, it's a real shitty spot.
Yeah.
But yeah. you also just put yourself in the spot by betting flop.
Agreed.
You know, you would just be paying two streets here, yep. which is like pot size on river. You probably
honestly, you might even be able to get away because he might just like bet way too fucking big on the turn. And when he non-sizes that turn, like I might call fold a lot.
Yeah, sure. Or the river just comes a fucking eight.
An eight.
Eight or spade. King or spade or anything yeah, like whatever. That. You probably just lose the absolute minimum here.
Yeah.
If you just check back flop.
Yeah, I agree. If you guys would like to be a part of Who's in the Muck, please head over to our Discord channel. You can find that in our pinned comment at onlyfriends_pod on Twitter. We have an entire community. We're happy to have you. And we will have an entire forum dedicated to In the Muck. If you haven't already, please like, subscribe. Go ahead and leave us a comment after the show. Let us know what you think about ACR not refunding the players that the bot busted. Let us know what you think about JMO taking beef. Taking it to the streets, coming after Mental Health Matt, or Strat Chat Matt, as I'd like to refer to him from now moving forward. let us know, man. Let us know if you just think it's all shit. Let us know if you're on JMO's. Let us know if you're a high stakes reg out there. the upper echelon of the highest of high stakes regs. By the way,
let me know if you're winning at South
Point. I mean, you're describing all of our chat, to be honest.
I know this. That's why I'm asking them to let me know.
Can we get Haxton's view on this?
I can promise you he does not give a shit. Can wholeheartedly say with confidence.
He does not care.
That he does not give a single flying fuck.
I'm right there with him.
And truthfully, like, I imagine that's true of the vast majority of the people that JMO's pretending are out here criticizing. Mm-hmm. Like, look, man, we're all tapped in into very different segments of the community. And I know where we stand in the majority of them. So whatever little fucking dark corner he's going to of, you know, guys that are firing the Triton and stroking him off in order to ensure that he continues to buy their action. Like, I don't care. I just don't. Sorry. Tomorrow won't be quite as much fire, but the one and only Melissa Poodog will be here. Mm-hmm. So we'll have some things to talk about. I can promise you that. Hopefully we'll see a further statement made by ACR and a bigger resolution. We're still waiting on those bot refunds, by the way. 10 million stolen, allegedly, back in December. I believe a few hundred bucks has been given back to the community. So again, you know, not to get back on it, but maybe have a fucking protocol in place that handles these types of things. I don't know. Pip's had enough. We're going to take off. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Wapo didn't even play us out today. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Later, squad.
Peace.